Okay, good morning, everyone. Wonderful to be back together. Today we travel to Yavne. Which, as you see on your map, it's located in the coastal area on the map on the left side, north of Ashdod, just a little bit southwest of Rehovot, south of Rishon and Bat Yam. It's a place that for me has great significance because I studied in the yeshiva in Yavne, or in the area of Yavne, you could call it in Kfutzat Yavne. And it has a very significant historical tradition, especially in the world, in a specific association, the world of Talmud Torah, of Torah learning. The name of the yeshiva that I studied in is called, anybody know? Kerem B'Yavne, exactly. So why is this yeshiva entitled Kerem B'Yavne? Because the phrase Kerem B'Yavne appears multiple times in the Talmud, in the Bavli, and in the Yerushalmi. And it has a specific connotation. Because agriculturally, even though there are some agricultural enterprises, let's say, in Kfutzat Yavne, there were cows, there were a lot of chickens, they're probably still there. You have a very distinct encounter with those chickens when you get there. But there is no Kerem in Yavne. Actually, the soil in the area of Yavne is not very conducive to agriculture. Unlike we talked about the Kerumim that Chazal identify in Bnei Brak and certainly in the north, other places. In Kfutzat Yavne, primarily they make pickles and watches. That's it. Olives, yes, also olives. Yes, olives, olives. So why is it referred to as Kerem B'Yavne? So take a look here, the Yerushalmi in the fourth parak of Brachos, source number one. The Tanina that we learned, Taman, Biyom Shehoshivo Es Reblezer Ben Azaria B'Yeshiva. It was the day that they appointed Reblezer Ben Azaria as the Rosh Yeshiva. This is a historical period which is going to be relevant to the time that we're talking about. Reblezer Ben Azaria was a prominent Talmudic giant. He was a scholar who was one of the Chachamim who, when Rabbi Gamliel was removed from being the chief rabbi, he was installed Bo Bayom. That day, Shehoshivu, that they installed, Lohoshiv means to sit, but in this case it means they installed, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is the Rosh Yeshiva. Taninan, we learned, Ze Midrash Darash Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria Lefnei Chachamim. This was a teaching. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria taught many teachings. You'll find several places in Shas, the Gemara has an expression, Bo Bayom, that day. What was that? What's Bo Bayom? And it doesn't say what day it is. But Bo Bayom is a reference to that specific day when Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria was installed as the Rosh Yeshiva, as the greatest, as the Nasi of all the Chachamim. That day, he taught this particular teaching, or they learned this issue. What story do you know has to do with Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria and that day? Yes, because we have a tradition, the Gemara says in Brachos, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria felt that he was too young and he wasn't established enough to become the Nasi, and we have a tradition that he grew white hair in his beard. That was the night before the famous statement when you find in Chazal, Bo Bayom, that's when it is. That's Bo Bayom. That's when Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria became the Rosh Yeshiva. Where did he darshan? Where did he teach? So the Gemara says he taught Lefnei Chachamim B'Kerem B'Yavne. From Kerem B'Yavne. So it says the Yerushalmi, V'chi Kerem HaYasham? There was no Kerem over there. What does it mean it was called Kerem B'Yavne? Ella, Elu Talmidei Chachamim, these are the sages, Shahayu Asuyin Shuros Shuros Kekarim. They were aligned rows by rows like a vineyard. Exactly like you're sitting today. So they had a Rebbe. So the Gemara Megillah talks about whether the Rebbe would stand or the Rebbe would sit, depending on the generation. And then they had boys, rabbis. At that time they weren't necessarily boys, they could be adults, men. But they were sitting in rows, in the same way that when you drive near a vineyard, you see that they're lined up just like this in rows, one after the next after the next. So that's how the students were arranged. So the association, the reason they call it Kerem B'Yavne, is because of the yeshiva that was there and that the guys sat, the rabbanim sat in rows. So the way that Chachamim, that the Gemara wants us to think, what we envision in our mind, when we think about Yavne, what are we supposed to envision? We're supposed to envision rabbis sitting and learning. That's the association that Chazal want us to have. And this idea of the concept of learning associated with Yavne takes root in a bunch of different ways. We all know there are, I don't know, umpteen machloksen in the Gemara between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, right? Until Hillel and Shammai themselves, Hillel and Shammai were two scholars. They were people. Until Hillel and Shammai came along, there were not that many arguments, right? The Gemara describes there was an argument about smicha, about how the laws relate to resting your hands on a carbon on Yontif, but there weren't a lot of arguments. The Rambam describes the Pirush Mishnayos based on the Gemara and Sanhedrin that Hillel and Shammai, they had not only their own arguments, which were very, very select, but then they had students and they had many arguments. Because the Gemara says Lo Shimshu Kol Tzarka, which is beyond the topic for today, but for some reason the methodology of learning of Hillel and Shammai, which were distinct, they were different, the way that their students applied it and integrated it meant that they looked at the world completely differently. And they could look at the same issue, but come to completely different conclusions. So whereas Hillel and Shammai only had a handful of arguments between themselves, but the students of Hillel and Shammai, what we call Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, had a zillion arguments. Every other page in Shas is arguments Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So the Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos quotes one of these arguments, and there it's a very sensitive topic because it relates to who can marry whom. And if you have somebody in the context of Yibum, Yibum talks about what's Yibum, where unfortunately Lo Aleinu, husband who has no children, passes away, the wife then is zakuk, she's connected to her brother-in-law. Well, that, in a normal context, you can't marry somebody's brother if it's that's a sister-in-law, that's an Easter. So trying to figure out who's permitted to do Yibum and who's not has very high stakes, potentially levels of Mamzerus. And Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai argued about this, and the Gemara in Yevamos tries to figure out, well, how did that actually work practically? What if you were from the Beis Shammai, Beis Medrash? How did you, could you get a Shidduch from the Beis Hillel community? So the Gemara has a discussion about this, and in this discussion about how they navigated this issue of who married whom, the Gemara says, well, in general, how do they resolve these issues? Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they're always arguing, so what happens? So this is a complicated story, but in the context of this story, the Gemara has something called a baskol. What is a baskol? Right, a heavenly voice. It's not a kol, it's a bas kol. It's the daughter of a kol, meaning it's the reverberation of a heavenly voice. It's not prophecy, it's not Ruach HaKodesh, but it's some form of a divine message that's being sent out. So there was a bas kol that was sent out from the heavens to get involved in this issue. There is a subsequent machlokas in the Gemara whether we should pay attention to what it says in the baskol, or we should say lo bashamayim here, we don't care what it says in the baskol. But there was a baskol that came out to adjudicate this issue, because in every generation they were struggling. It could be, the Gemara says in the beginning of Shabbos, they had a period of time where there was a gathering of chachamim. Generally speaking, the Beis Shammai folks were more strict, because that was the shorish of the neshama of the Mahalach of Beis Shammai, was very strict, was Eish. they gathered together, and the Gemara says in the Bavli, and it's expanded in Yerushalmi, that Rabu, they had more Talmidim of Beis Shammai, so they made 18 strictures, 18 gzeros. Because in that generation, in that kibbutz of Chachamim, there were more Beis Shammai fellows than there were Beis Hillel fellows. And therefore, when they got together and they took a vote, well, the Beis Shammai folks won the vote, and they instituted many strictures. So this was going back and forth. Many of those strictures we still observe today from that vote where the Beis Shammai outnumbered the Beis Hillel. But then it swung back and forth, the pendulum going back and forth and back and forth. How were they machriya? So we have a bas kol. A bas kol, a heavenly voice came out and said, the halacha follows Beis Hillel. The Gemara in Erevin also has a this-worldly reason why we should paskin like Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai, even though Beis Shammai, the Gemara says, was mechadet each day, they were exceedingly sharp. But the Baskel says that we paskin like Beis Hillel. This decision to paskin like Beis Hillel affects everything in the world of learning. Can you think of a mesechta or a page in the Gemara that doesn't have an argument about Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai? This is koveya, all of learning. Where did the bas kol appear, so to speak? Says the Yerushalmi here. Ooh, it got cut off. Number two. This Yerushalmi. I guess it's exact. Welcome. It got cut off. It's the Yerushalmi in Yevamos Aleph Vav. You see, number two. The word Yevamos is not there. But it's in the end of the first parak in Yevamos, the same sugi in the Bavli about Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, whether they were Noe Kedivraim or not. So here, says the Talmud Yerushalmi, on that baskol, Mishiyatza baskol la'olam halacha kedivrei Beis Hillel. Once the baskol came out, we always follow Beis Hillel. V'chola over al bedivrei Beis Hillel, somebody who violates, divrei Beis Hillel chayav misa. Tani, Yatza Baskol Va'amra, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chaim, a famous Talmudic teaching that these Beis Shammai and these Beis Hillel, both of their words are valuable. There's a kiyum of Talmud Torah. It's a mitzvah to study them. However, Aval Halacha Ke Beis Hillel Liolam. Be'echan Yatza Baskol asks the Yerushalmi, where did the Baskol come out? Rav Bibi, B'shem Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan was one of the first generation Amoraim living in Eretz Yisrael. Omar, B'yavne, Yatsa Baskol. It came out in Yavne. One more Gemara, now going to the Bavli, which is a fascinating way of thinking about this issue of associating Talmud Torah with Yavne. The Gemara says here in Chaf Hamad Beis and Bava Basra, Amr Yitzchak, source number three, Harotza Sheyachkim Yadrim. A person who wants to be wise, Yadrim. What does the word yadrim mean? It's an interesting verb. Yadrim. Comes from the word? Darom. Exactly. Yadrim. He should yadrim. He should south. Exactly. We have to figure that out. Vishayashir. Somebody wants to be wealthy. Yatspin. He should go north. And the simonech, you know what reminds you of this? Shulchan betzafon umenorah bedarom. Okay. So Rashi says on this Gemara the following. Rashi says, we're all now facing east. If we were in the Heichal facing the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we would be looking at the Paroches. The Shulchan would be on the right side, looking in, right, looking to the west. The Shulchan would be on the right side, the menorah would be on the left side. So it's north and south. So Harotze Sheikh Yachkim, this is the south.
This is south.
Sorry. Right. From this, it would be this way. Right. This way is north. This is the Shulchan here, and it's up. So when we daven, so if we're going to look toward the Shulchan, if we're thinking about Parnassa, we're going to tilt, says Rashi. You tilt a little bit. You're facing east, but you're going to tilt a little bit to the north. If you're thinking about kind of incorporating more spiritual energy from the south, that's going to be for Chachma. So you're going to tilt a little this way, which is why in Yirtzeh Hashem next week when it's Chanukah, we're going to light Chanukah licht where? Over there. That's where they set it up, right? That's the, oh, where's Ira?
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
Correct, right? Okay. The ritual committee paskined that you're supposed to light it over there.
We heard
that's Baskol says. So that's Rashi's pshat, and that's what I always thought was the pshat. It was great. But if you look, the Aruch was Reb Nosson of Rome, one of the very, very early Rishonim to comment on language and definition of terms in the Gemara. He says something very different. Fascinating, Aruch. The first pshat in the Aruch is something else. He says, wait a second. Let's think about Israel. Let's think about the land of Israel. Not exactly how we think about it today. But remembering how we said that, remember when we spoke about Tveria, we said that Tveria is in the Tabor of Eretz Yisrael. So if Tveria is in the Tabor of Eretz Yisrael, what's in the north area of Eretz Yisrael? So it's going to be the Galil and the Golan and Tzfat. So what's going to be further down? That's going to be the Darom. I saw this and I was like, how did I not ever think about that? Because in a lot of places in Shas, it talks about Chachmei Darom or Ziknei Darom. Who are the Chachmei Darom? I never thought about that. Where is Chachmei Darom? For many of us, our frame of reference in Israel is Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. So south of Yerushalayim. So you figure maybe the Chachmei Darom, they were in Gush, they were in Hebron. But no. Scholars point out that Darom means Darom vis-a-vis the Galil. So if anybody would ask you, if you're going on a tiyul today to the Darom, if they were to ask you, where are you going? Where would you tell them? You're probably going to, I don't know, to the Mitzpeh Ramon. You're going down to the Eilat. No, when you asked the Chazal, when they said, go to the Ziknei Darom, you know who they meant. They meant the people in Yavne or Lud, this area, because this area was Darom vis-a-vis the Chachamim who were in Usha and Shvarim. I was like, when I saw this, I'm like, I never knew that. And it makes perfect sense that there is this kibbutz of Chachamim who are in the Darom, means Darom of the Galil. Doesn't mean like we would say today, the Darom in the south. No, Darom means in the Shvela. So says the Aruch, Harod Sesheyachim. The Gemara is saying, you want to be a Chacham? Yadrim! Go to the people, the Chachamim, who are in the Darom. Meaning, in Yavne, in Lud. This is the place where they would say the hotbed of intellectual ferment. Where are the spiritual giants right now? You go to the Darom. You want to make a parnasa? You want to know where economic activity is? Go to the Tzafon. And the Shulchan and the Nor is just a simen. But what they meant was a geographic frame. They meant to say, if you want to learn Torah seriously, go to the Ziknei Darom. Yeah. Probably a lot of agricultural.
Oh, I guess it's close to Tyre too, so it could be like
commerce. Right. Oh. So why is it? How did it? Yeah.
Why not say it's south from Bavel?
Could also be south from Bavel, because even though, if you look on a map, Bavel, which is, let's say, equivalent, give or take, to Iraq, it's not really north, it's really east, but the Pasuk has a reference, the Pasuk says about Bavel, Mitzafon Tipatach HaRa'ah. The Ra'ah, Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, they're going to come from the Tzafon. Why are they going to come from the Tzafon? Because historically, the way that people traveled was the invasion was going to be through the north. So they associated Bavel with the Tzafon, even though Bavel geographically is more east than it is north, but they associated with. So it could also be Tzafon in that sense. Why is it? How did it become that these associations of Torah learning became identified with Yavne and that area? Well, because, take a look, the Gemara says, now the Gemara in Megillah. No, I'm sorry. This is not in Megillah. This is in... Mar Makomos got messed up here. I apologize. This is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Lamed Aleph, Amed Aleph, going over to Amed Beis. I'm sorry that Mar Makom got messed up. Rosh Hashanah, Lamed... What's that?
Number four.
It's really Rosh Hashanah, Lamed Aleph, Amed Aleph at the bottom of the page, going over to Amed Beis. The Gemara says that the Shechina left the Beis Hamikdash before the Babylonians ever entered the Beis Hamikdash. The Shechina was long gone. That's how they got there. How could it be? It couldn't be that the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence would be in a makom and there should be a churban there. So the Gemara says the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence left. So we're talking here about the first Beis Hamikdash, Rashi points out. And the Gemara says that there were 10, whatever this means, kiviyachol, it's meant to teach us something, not that the Ribbono Shel Olam is bound by this, but whatever it means, that the Ribbono Shel Olam made 10 stops. Like when you take a driving trip from here to New York, so you make your first stop in Indiana, then you make the next stop somewhere in Ohio, and then, you know, like on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, you know, so kiviyachol, so to speak, the Ribbono Shel Olam made 10 stops. So the Gemara says, that it describes how it went from on top of the Kruvim, the presence of the Borei Olam, until outside the Hechel, and then the next stop, until it was back in the heavens, it was taken away. And the Gemara says, the parallel to those 10 stops that the Shechina took to leave in the Bayis Rishon, so too the Sanhedrin also made 10 stops in its exile. Says the Gemara, Uchenegdan, similar to those 10 stops of the Shechina in the first Beis Hamikdash, goes to Sanhedrin in the second. Mi Gemara, we learned the following. Mi Lishchas Hagazis, it went from the Lishchas Hagazis. What is the Lishka? Lishka means office. Hagazis, the Yun, meaning this is where the Sanhedrin sat. There was the presence of the Sanhedrin was in the Beis Hamikdash. They had a special office. Lachanus. Chanus is an area outside of the Azara. It's called the literally Chanus means a shop. So the Sanhedrin, they first left their makom, their place in the Beis Hamikdash. Once they did that, they lost some of their authority. The ability to try capital cases is only in that makom. So now they're kind of downgraded. They're leaving the Beis Hamikdash. They're going to the Chanus, which is still on the Har Bayis, but Mechanus LiYerushalayim. Then the Sanhedrin left Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim leYavne, and they went from Yerushalayim to Yavne. Now this stage you see now is going to set the stage for what's happening. The first step of the Sanhedrin leaving the Lishkas Hagazis, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, not here, took place 40 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. So the destruction of Beis Hamikdash is in the year 70 of the Common Era. So in the year 30 of the Common Era, they left the Lishkas Hagazis. That means they're no longer trying capital cases. Take one step out. But then, after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, they left Yerushalayim and they went to Yavne. Umiyavne Leusha. Then they went from Yavne for a brief period of time to Usha. Where is Usha? Usha is in the north, in the Galil. From Usha, they came back to Yavne. Umiyavne Leusha, then they went back to Usha. Usha went to Shvarim. Shvarim is a very close proximity to Usha, two nearby cities. Shvarim to Beis Sha'arim. Beis Sha'arim to Tzipori. Tzipori Litveria. Vitveria Amuka Mikulan. Tveria was the last stop. And this is what we spoke about when we spoke about Tveria, how that was the last place where the Sanhedrin convened. And the Rambam's tradition that the Tveria is going to be a place where the Sanhedrin is going to reconvene in the Yemos HaMashiach, etc. So where do the Chachamim go upon the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash? They go to Yavne. So now we can understand historically why it is that when we think about the period of the early post-destruction, so you're going to talk about the generation of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, all of these sages in the first and second centuries of the Common Era, they're congregating in Yavne, because Yavne is the place where the Sanhedrin went. Now, they're not all there. So, for example, who was the leading, most significant rabbinic figure? Who is the greatest sage of the generation at the time of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash and afterwards? Before Rabbi Gamliel, it was? That's right, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't live in Yavne. He lived elsewhere. The Gemara says, Bror Chayil. But the primary yeshiva of the Chachamim was in Yavne. He came to Yavne. He spent time in Yavne, even though he personally lived in Bruchheil. Yeah.
Is he the one that said, Tame
Yavne? Ah, excellent. That's why we came, to get that one line. The rest of this is just just explanation. No, no, it's good. You can do the rest. That's it. This is just appreciating that one line. Good. Okay. We'll get back to that in 1 second. No, more than 1 second, but... So that's what we're going to get to. The historical background now is that the Chachamim, at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, are resettling in Yavne. Now, it happens to be, as we'll see, there were already Chachamim who were living in Yavne before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but primarily the Sanhedrin is moving to Yavne, and that's going to be the kibbutz of the Chachamim. So that's where the majority of the Chachamim are going to be living and teaching, and that's why, it's not surprising to you now, why, where the Baskel is going to appear. Where is it going to appear? It's going to appear in Yavne. And that when we think about Yavne, it's associated with this period of a yeshiva, with a kerem, where people are learning. And if you want to know, Shaharot Shiyachim Yadrim, go to Yavne, or the neighborhoods where you're going to find that. Okay. So it's very, I'm not sure. Rashi mentions, he doesn't explain, I don't know, I have to ask somebody who knows more than I do, why it is that they had this brief exit from Yavne to somewhere else. It's very likely that as the persecutions, remember, you're going from the year 70 till into the second century, where the Hadrianic persecutions, things get much worse, they had to contend with various political challenges. So think about who's living at this time. So Rabbi Akiva is living at this time, right? The story of the Seder of the five sages, that's taking place in this period. So Rabbi Akiva is going to be martyred. This place of Yavne is not just going to serve as the Makom of Limud, but it also actually becomes the point of contact from a political standpoint. Who are you going to talk to? If you're the Roman government and you just destroy the Beis HaMikdash, who are you going to talk to? You're going to talk to people who are there, who are in Yavne. So Yavne becomes not just the focal point of learning, but engagement with the Romans. Now, part of the reason that the things are going to get much worse, and the Sanhedrin is going to go even further, and then ultimately it's going to be disbanded, is because the Merit Bar Kokhba, that revolt, kind of crushes the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael in 132, 134, something like that. 70-some years after, that's 60-some years, 135, something like that. Yeah. Ah, we have to figure out why, yeah. Good. Okay. Parenthetically, which we're not going to talk about today, because it's worth it. It really needs its own shear. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there are many takanos which are instituted. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai institutes enactments. They're very consequential in terms of our life today. So, for example, the fact that we take the lulav and the esrog for 7 days is a consequence of a takana, of an enactment of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So these enactments are very personal in terms of how we experience our Yiddishkeit. There were two kinds of enactments. There were enactments that were what we call Zecher L'Churban, to remember the destruction. And then there were enactments that were Zecher L'Mikdash, to remember how it was in the Beis HaMikdash. So, for example, the fact that when someone builds a home, they leave a piece of the front of the house unfinished, that's Zecher L'Churban. That reminds you of the destruction. The fact that we take the Dal Gminim for 7 days, that doesn't remember the destruction. That remembers the way it was in the Beis HaMikdash. Because Meikar Adin Doraisa, according to the Chumash, the only place that you take the Dal Gminim for all 7 days is in the Beis HaMikdash. So I want to put that on the back burner, because the truth is that's a whole world unto itself. And I actually want to focus on two smaller points, which is the first one is the Gemara Brachos also appears in Megillah. Source number 5, Tana Rabbanan Shimon HaPakuli. Pakuli was probably his occupation, his vocation. His name was Shimon HaPakuli. His year, he organized Shimon Esri Brachos Lefnei Rabbi Gamliel Ala Seder B'Yavne. Now the Gemara Megillah points out that we had 18 Brachos already from the time of the men of the Great Assembly, the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah. But yet, when it came to Yavne, they reformalized them, or they formalized them in a new way that they had not done before. And I'm thinking, what's the significance of this inyan? That's point number one. But point number two, which we experience all the time, is also very much associated with Yavne. The Gemara says in Brachos and Memches and Adveis, you see it here in source number six, the Gemara says, Hatova Hametiv beYavne Tiknua. The last of the Brachos in the benching, which is what we call the Brach of Hatova Hametiv, good and better, that was instituted in Yavne. Meaning, Mida Oraisa, biblically, you only have three brachos. You have Hazon, you have Ala Aretz, and you have Ubnei Yerushalayim. The last bracha was an add-on from the Chachamim, and that was instituted where? In Yavne. What's the story with Hatova Meitiv? So the Gemara says the following. Hatova Meitiv b'Yavne Teknua. How? Why? Keneged Haruge Beitar. It's correlated with the murdered victims of Beitar. De Amar Rav Masna. Oso hayom shenitnu haruge Beitar lekvura. That day that the martyrs of Beitar were given to burial, tiknu biyavne hatov hametiv. It was established in Yavne the bracha of hatov v'hametiv. What does that mean? Hatov the good, shelo hisrichu. That the bodies, the corpses, the victims, they did not decompose. V'hametiv shenidnu lekvura. That they were given to burial. What's this a reference to? What's happening at this point in Jewish history? Remember, there's a revolt. There was a war. There was a revolt against the Romans. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed already, but there was an uprising. And the Gemara in Gittin describes the terrible, calamitous destruction that was meted out on the Jewish communities during this period. And the bloodshed of Beitar, the Gemara describes, was overwhelming. And the bodies were not given proper burial. Lo aleinu. So the Gemara says, the day that those Jews were buried, we have a bracha. Hatov, that the bodies didn't decompose, and Vametiv, that they were given to Kvura. And this was given, this bracha was given its formal stamp of approval, and it was indicated, it was enacted, you could say, the takana was in Yavne. Why is it dafka in Yavne? What's the nakuda? What is Yavne about? Why did the Sanhedrin go to Yavne? So it's the word. It's the word Yavne. What does the word Yavne also mean? Yibone. Yibone. Perhaps that's the chap. That's the inyan. The message, the essence of Yavne is the concept of the capacity to build despite the destruction. It's the ability to see the future, Yibone, even though right now it's not. It's the ability to make something out of nothing, to look at a destructive situation, something that's totally ruined, it's in pieces, and yet see Yibone. It'll be built. To see that spark, that glimmer from within the ashes. That Yibone is perhaps why the Chachamim went to Yavne. And perhaps they even went there before the destruction because they felt that this was part of the essence of this makom. That was the koach of this makom that they were tapping into. And that brings us to the story that you mentioned on the Amud Beis. This is what I really wanted to focus on with you today. This is a well-known... What's that? There were chachamim in Yavne before the destruction, but it's hainu hach, it's the same. How do we know that? We'll see in a second. So here's the story that many of you are familiar with, but I want to give you the whole story so that you can appreciate and understand now how this pshat of Yibaneh is really what Yavne is about. Because the Gemara says in the top line, this is Nun Vav Amid Aleph over to Amid Beis, probably the most famous of all the Gemaras in Gittin about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is this story. You get to see it inside now for yourself. Abba Sikra, top left. Abba Sikra. That was his name. Abba Sikra, Reish Biryone de Yerushalayim. He was the head of the Biryonim. Today, in modern Hebrew, if you say that somebody is a Biryon, what do you mean about them? Right? They're a bully. As you in Yiddish, you would say they're a bulvan. A biryon is somebody who's a violent guy. In the Gemara's time, a biryoni meant warmongers. They were Jews who wanted to initiate military conflict against the government. So the Gemara tells us that there was a siege in Yerushalayim, and they had years of provisions. So what did the warmongers do to instigate an immediate revolt? They destroyed it. So these extremists destroyed the storehouses of wood, of fuel, meaning the wood was the fuel, and food. And so now they're facing famine, so they're out of desperation, they're going to have a military campaign. But the military campaign was fruitless. The Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says that it's not going to happen. But guess what? This guy, Abba Sikra, Reish Biryoni, the head of the Biryon of Yerushalayim, Bar Achte de Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Bar Achte, the son of the sister of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, his nephew, Hava. So Shalach Le, Tobitzin Olegaboy. He sent him, Come quietly to talk to me in secret. We need to meet. We need to talk. Also, Amale Ad Ema Savdisuach Vikatlisa Leila Alma Bekafna. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to Abba Sikra, how long are you going to do this? You and your underground rogues are starving people in the streets. How long are you going to keep this chokehold on Yerushalayim? Amale Ma'iavid. As is the case sometimes when you have rogue, wild, violent people, Abba Sikra says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I actually don't have control of this mob anymore. He says, if I say to them something, Iaminalu midli katluli, if I tell them to stop, they're going to kill me. So the head of the Biryonim, think about this, the head of the Biryonim looks like the head of Biryonim, but actually has no influence because these are wild, violent people. So they're not going to listen to authority, he says to them, to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What can I do? They're going to kill me. So here's what I'm going to do, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. I'm going to come up with a stunt to at least salvage something. What he calls on the next line, to epok that I should get out, to efsha dahave hatzolaporta, there will be at least a small salvation. What can I do? So Omar Le, Abba Sikra, who's a street smart guy, says, I have an idea. You should lie in bed, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and we should put out a WhatsApp memo that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Godel Hadar, is really sick. Everybody should say Tehillim immediately. So everybody starts saying Tehillim, and then they're going to put out an announcement that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has died. They're only going to allow the close Talmidim in. They're going to take some kind of smelly animal, sneak it under the bed. They're going to put him in a box, and they're going to pretend like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is gone, and they're going to take him out of the city, which is under siege, for burial. And they come up with this ingenious plan that when they get to the outskirts of the city, when they get to the siege, the Romans are going to say, we want to inspect the body. So they say, you know, you can't do that. That's disrespectful. It's a disgrace. They say, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to give him just one little stab to make sure. They said, you can't do that. It's totally disrespectful. And the ruse works. And they smuggle Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai out of the city. That's what the Gemara says. This is the story of how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets out of the city because he has to get past the Birionim on the inside and the Romans on the outside. This is what happens. So on the, if you look on the first wide, wide line, here in the top section, Nichnas bo Rabbi Eliezer mitzad echad, Rabbi Yeshua mitzad acher. Who are the two senior chacham of the generation? The rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. It's Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So they hold on one side each one, and he gets out. So he arrives at the Roman encampment, the third super wide line. Kimata lahasam, he gets there, and he finally arrives at the Roman encampment. I believe this was Vespasian. I'm forgetting. No, I think it was Vespasian. And he says, now there's an exchange. He says to him, you're the king. He says, I'm not the king. And he prophesies essentially with Ruach HaKodesh that he's going to be the king. Great. So they have a back and forth about why didn't Rabbi Yochanan come until now? So he says, well, because there are warmongers that couldn't get out of there. They have a whole discussion. So go down. Skip down, see the second section all the way at the bottom. Omar Lay, second line from the bottom of the page. Omar Lay, Mazel Azilna. Vespasian says, I'm going to leave. Why am I going to leave? Why is Vespasian going to leave? Where is he going? What's that? Rome, because he's now going to be the emperor. So Vespasian says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Mezel Azilna, I'm going to leave. Ve'ine shachrina m'shadinra, I'm going to send you somebody else. Elaboy minoy midi de'etin lach. Ask for me something that I will give you. Omar le, what did he say? Tein li Yavne ve'chachameha. Give me Yavne and her chachamim, and then two other things. Shul Shulta de Rabbi Gamliel, the family dynasty of Rabbi Gamliel, comes from David HaMelech. That's the future Davidic king. And Asvasa and a medical doctor, someone to take care of Rabbi Tzadok, who had been fasting for many years. What is now the meaning of Tein Li Yavne v'chachameha? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, first of all, you see that there were already sages who were living in Yavne. They were already learning in Yavne. There were already chachamim who were there, even though the primary chacham were in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. But he says, look, I need to be able to rebuild. What do you mean, rebuild? The Gemara says, what had not yet been destroyed? The Beis HaMikdash had not been destroyed yet. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, look, I know the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. But I'm already thinking now, Yibane. The goal, the tachlis, in a period of destruction, is to see the little sparks of Yibane. So he asks for Yavne, for Yibane, for the Romans to spare that little spark that should remain, and then perpetuate learning. And it's granted. So what happens? The Sanhedrin and the Chachamim, they move from Yerushalayim to Yavne. And Shimon HaPakuli, he goes back to Rabbi Gamliel and he says, now we're going to institute Shmona Esrei. We had Shmona Esrei. The answer is, it's a new kind of Shmona Esrei. It's the Shmona Esrei of the rebuilding of the Yibane. We had a Shmona Esrei before, but now it needs to be reinstituted. And this is, I think, the pshat in the bracha of Hatova HaMeitiv. Meaning, Hatova Meitiv, they were looking at destruction. And what did they do? They said a bracha on the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us that little spark that it will be rebuilt. This is something, it's a little bit of nechama. But that nechama is the harbinger of something greater down the road. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gemara debates whether this was a wise move or not, did not ask for the Beis HaMikdash to be spared. He didn't ask for that. He asked for a little nechama, a little something just to keep them going. Yavne, the idea of Yavne and Yibane, perhaps, is this point, that we have a place of Torah that's not Yerushalayim, and it's not going to last forever. The Sanhedrin is going to keep going, and it's going to go to the north. But Dafka, in a makom of destruction, there is that spark, that piece of hope, that little bit. I'll end with one vort on this point from Rabbi Pelkovitz, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Rabbi Pelkovitz used to say a mashal. I heard this from him a few times. The pasuk, in davening, we say mishan umiftach latzadikim. There's a mishan. Mishan is a stick that you lean on, and then there's a miftach. It's something that is bitachon that's very strong. So he said, what's the difference between a mishan and a miftach? A miftach is the ultimate salvation. It's very firm. So he told the story of a pauper, a Russian peasant who lived in some faraway farm, and he saved up some money to go once in a while, every couple months, every year, to a nearby town. He would hire a wagon driver and a wagon to take him to a local tavern. So it's the dead of winter in Russia, and whatever, someplace. Mom is freezing. He's sitting in the back of the wagon. He's warm under his little blanket there. And the guy's driving him in the wagon to this. He should finally get a drink after, a couple of months of the cold Russian winter all by himself in his farm. After an hour on the trip, he leans out the window to the driver and he says to him, "New epis, do you have maybe a little something? Yeah, maybe a brown paper bag. You don't drive without anything in Russia. You have to have something when you're driving, no?" So the guy looks at him and says, "Avada, I have something here. I have a bag. I have a flask." He says, "But why do you ask? We're going to a bar. You're going to be able to drink when we get there. It's, we've been on the road for an hour. We'll be there in 3 hours." He says, "Because I'm cold right now. And I need something to hold me over." So Rabbi Pelkovitz used to say, he said, the Rabbono Shalom gives us a mivtach, something that we're going to get to that's going to be yatsiv, it's going to be the ultimate Yeshua. But in the meanwhile, on the road there, it's tough, it's cold, it's lonely. So to that end, he gives us a little mishan, a little something to lean on, a little drink just to keep us warm, to keep us going. So he used to say, he gives us a little 6-day war, keeps us going a little further. He gives us the next miracle, a little something, until we get to the ultimate Yeshua. Yavne is not a city of antiquity. There's a tradition, it was probably in Shevet Dan, although that's not so clear. And Yavne is not a city of the future. What was Yavne? It's the mishan. It's the momentary place where we derive hope for Yibane. And that was the crucial role that Yavne played in Jewish history. That's what it's trying to tell us, that whenever we're in a situation when we're facing Churban, we could still say a bracha of Hatova HaMeitiv. Because that means the Rebbe Shalom is there, he's taking care of us. He does a little miracle that'll remind us that one day, Yibone, it'll be better. And the amazing thing is that so many of the mitzvos, the chachamim, it's takanos, and the learning that took place in Yavne exists ladoros. Why? Because we're in such a long galus. So we need to keep going back to that nekuda, the nekuda of Yavne, of Yibane, in our own lives, whenever we feel like there's a churban, lo aleinu, to remind ourselves that there is a mishan. The Rabbono Shel Olam gives us that little next step to keep us going until, hopefully, we get back to Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh. Have a great day. In a few minutes' time, about 3 minutes, the lecture in memory of Dr. Greenfield, Zichrono Levracha, will be taking place in the social hall.